this week's episode of Asexuals Anonymous, the podcast where we talk all about asexuality. If you'd like to get in touch, please do. We love hearing from you. The email address is asexualsanon@hotmail.com. Our Instagram page is Asexuals Anonymous Podcast. My Instagram DMs are always open as well, which is amiebutler96, AmieButler 96, and also follow along on TikTok. My TikTok is AmyButler66. Let's get on with this week's episode. Right, this week's episode, we are joined by a lovely guest. We've got Ellie on the show. Hello, Ellie.
Hello.
Hello, and we also have my anonymous friend.
I'm still here.
Oh, yay! Do you know what? I'm so excited because this is the first time there's three of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
How exciting! How are you guys? Ellie, how are you?
I'm very hot. It's like this weather in the UK is not, it's too hot. It's something like 23 degrees, which is no. And no, I just can't cope. I can't function. I can't speak. I am a autumnal, like autumnal girl. Give me jumpers, give me lattes, give me cozy blankets. Just not hot weather.
You're not the heat kind of guy. I love the heat, me.
I really like that this is Ellie's first time on the podcast and she's talking about the weather because me and you always talk about the weather.
I have to. It's like the open, it's like the, you have to do it. We were speaking for like right 2 hours and you
podcast.
Still have to talk about the weather.
Yeah, it's the right passage on this podcast.
I know, the only way to introduce yourself, isn't it? Hi, I'm Amy and the weather's really hot.
When there's a heat wave in Britain, yes.
Oh, anonymous friend, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm enjoying the weather, but I got to sit out in it on a little week-long holiday last week, so yeah. I like the weather. At the minute, when it gets to like 30-odd later in the week, I might be a little bit more Team Ellie and get me back to autumn, but at the minute I'm all right. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, am I going to have to drop off some ice lollies to you at some point?
Yeah, probably. That's one of our things, isn't it? We always like to have a little... After your show, when you did your show, I was like, I'm not going to get her flowers. I'm going to get her a Roundtree's fruit pastel ice lolly.
I cannot
Well done
you.
For doing your show.
That was so appreciated.
That was hot when I came to watch your show. It was really hot as well.
I think that was the hottest I've ever been in my whole entire life.
Yeah,
that's no exaggeration. Yeah. But I have just also had an ice lolly. I had a rocket one, and I needed it. I felt a bit sick, and it made me feel so much better. Mm. Little tip for you guys: if you're feeling ill, have an ice.
How are you? Are you all right? Are you doing well?
I'm all right. I'm going through a process of teeth whitening.
Okay.
Don't know if you can tell.
Gleaming.
If you're on YouTube watching this, here you go.
Ding.
ding ding ding. And they're really sensitive.
Oh.
But it should be worth it.
So probably maybe don't eat so many ice lollies then if they're sensitive.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Anyway, so Ellie, can I start off by asking you how you identify under the asexual umbrella, if that's okay?
Do you know it's the first time anyone's ever asked me that? Or just like in general, like they're just assumed to be heterosexual, I suppose. So I under the asexual spectrum, I identify as demi, so demisexual.
I think that's how I identify too.
I do fluctuate, I always was like demi when I discovered demisexuality at 25 and I had my awakening and I realized there'll be so many details. I'm definitely demi. And then I think probably this time last year, so about a year ago, I suddenly thought, actually, am I gray? Because there are moments, and they, yeah, but then, I don't know, I haven't dated since I was 25 either. It's like, I'm asexual, yes, I can stop dating. Great. It was permission granted. And I'd still say I'm demisexual. I have had relationships in the past. I have fallen in love, and I have had those moments of kind of, oh, I completely trust you, therefore I'm sexually attracted to you right now. Fleeting, but they did happen when I was predominantly in relationships, but they have happened twice since I looked at my, it's just twice, even though it was three twice, but it's typically always with actors, which is just terrible. I think I have a bit of a type. So I think it's because actors are kind of, you, they are trying to make you emotional and create that emotional connection, and so sometimes it just occurs So, but yeah, still very fleeting. So yeah.
Ellie, personal question, like, is it exclusively like male or female, or are you?
So far male. But I'm open to anything, kind of. I think the thing is about being ace, I'm already in a kind of narrow box as it is in terms of availability, so I'm not going to narrow it any further by saying, you know what, I'm going to say no to these people, no to, it's like, no. If I feel emotion or attraction or sexual attractions to somebody, regardless of gender, I'm open to it, but so far it's only been men.
The way we just nodded our heads off at that.
Yeah, relatable.
That's so funny. So actually, anonymous friend,
yes,
do you mind me asking, where do you think you sit under asexual umbrella at the moment?
I think we've had this conversation like offline like several times, because I've switched like 700 times, more so in like the last like even like whatever 6 months, but that's, I probably would say I'm probably leaning more towards kind of demi, but then we had a little look, and I think we're gonna look at it on another episode, like all the different subcategories and what they actually mean. But you can give it a little Google. There is an asexuality, it's kind of like a Wikipedia page, and it outlines them all and goes through them all. But it's hard because it's like Ellie said, she sometimes she's demi, sometimes she's grey, and I know that you're the same. So I think at the minute I'm kind of sitting in the demi category.
Yeah.
And I'm quite content there at the minute. So
I think that like the demi and the grey go quite hand in hand.
Mm. Yeah.
Quite similar, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think with a lot of the different subcategories of asexuality, it's, you can kind of fit into multiple areas.
Yeah.
I think when I first figured it out, it was just, I'm just asexual, bam, that's it. Like again, like Ellie said, no more dating, no nothing, that's it. Whereas, Whereas discovering different parts of asexuality and things like that, like, it just gives you a bit more of an idea of yourself. So I think I wouldn't necessarily just identify as ace now.
Yeah, yeah. That's... Ellie, are you like open to dating at the minute? What's your dating situation like?
No, absolutely not. I was dating from the age of 21 to 25 because I had a relationship and such, and it was lovely. It was a summer romance, you know, didn't end particularly great, but it was lovely for the time period and such. And then I moved to London and kind of my life started, and I got all the apps, and I was dating, not like religiously or anything, it was like one every couple of months and such. I had a few good dates. I had a few second and third dates, which were nice. And I was seeing someone when I was 25 during the pandemic, which was delightful because I didn't see them. Which I know sounds like, okay, but he put effort in. He phoned me up. We had Zoom calls. We did have a date in person. We went bowling and walking, and it was Christmas, and it was very nice. And he was really supportive during a tough time, and it was going great. And then I met up with him in person, and he was like, so are you ready to come home with me? And I was saying, no, I'm not. I've known you for 6 months, but I don't want to go back to your flat. And it was the age old pressure of, oh, just come back to my flat. We're not going to do anything. We'll just hang out. I was like, I don't believe Hugh right now. I'm not getting the vibe that we wouldn't do anything. And I don't want to be like 30 minutes away from a train station.
Yeah.
So I politely declined, and he was okay to an extent, but he did insist I kissed him before I left. And that was the end of that, to be honest. Right. I did kiss him, but I was like, you know what, no. And I kind of at that point I'd read a book and I'd heard about demisexuality and was thinking, oh God, this is me. And then I did a bit more digging after that because I realised I hated dating. And I had nothing, no attraction at all for him. I really liked him. And when I didn't see him, I liked him a lot. But then when I saw him and I was in the room, I was like, there's nothing here physically at all. And so yeah, once I did a bit of digging into demisexuality and realised, yeah, this is me, and I became comfortable with that because it took a little bit of time, and I just thought, do I want to date right now as a demisexual woman? Because I did go on one date afterwards and I explained I was demisexual in advance, and they said, I don't know what that is. I was like, don't worry, I'm discovering it too. So we had a conversation, and we met up, and within 5 minutes it was like, so we're going back to my flat. It's like, I'm good, and we were just having dinner, and he was like, no, we're going back to my flat, I'll cook you dinner there. It's like, but I'm fine here. And we got to this restaurant, we had a booking, and it just felt, it was so much pressure. And I did have to remind him several times I'm demisexual. He said, yeah, but that doesn't exist, does it? At which point I said, I'm going to the bathroom, and I didn't return.
Oh my god. Yes, Ellie.
So, it was yeah, because I'd already been to the bathroom twice and there was an exit in the bathroom. I was like, this restaurant is made for people like me. And I was like, I'm just gonna take my bag, you know, women's stuff. And then walked out and that was it, I didn't go back. And yeah, after that I became quite anxious about dating.
Well yeah, I'm not surprised. Stopped.
So yeah, it was just too much pressure. I did go back a few times and spoke to a few people. I always made it very clear I'm demisexual, and I always got the same three responses. The first of which was, that doesn't exist, you know, that doesn't sounds fake. Okay. The second one was like, that's completely fine, but I'll prove you wrong. It's like, okay. And then the third one was always just kind of, explain it to me. And the more you explained it, the more they kind of were like, no, this isn't real, this just sounds like dating. And it just got frustrating. So nah, I just gave up on it. And I the second I said, and I deleted all the apps, and I said to myself, that's it, I'm not dating anymore. If I have a friendship which develops into a dating, which I think is more likely for me anyway, then great, I'm open to that. But I'm not doing apps anymore ever again. And it's the best decision I ever made. And I'm so much happier as a result, like taking that pressure off as well.
Yeah, so I feel the same, to be fair. Taking the pressure of pressure off of dating in general. I think I'm the same. Like, as soon as I realized I was ace, I was like, oh, I'm going to just not date for a bit. And not having that pressure felt so nice, and I feel like I've enjoyed not having that pressure for so long, which is why I've not dated since. And although I've said that I would this year, it's still too nice not to have that pressure.
Yeah, you've still only been on a date with me.
It was successful though.
Oh yes, it was. We had an absolute blast.
We did.
I think I've grown so many friendships though as a result of not dating. So I have more time for my friends. Even the ones that are dating, even the ones that are married, even the ones that have kids, I am always the friend that goes around their house, or I'm always the one that takes them out for dinner, or we go out and whatever, and we have a fun time. So from a love point of view, I have so much love in my life, which I didn't have when I was dating. It was just me and two other mates probably at that time, because I've had time to build up those platonic relationships, which I adore. I now have, I'm not going to say too many, you can't have too many, but I'm now fully booked until September. So it's quite hard getting in my calendar these days.
Oh, we are privileged.
Yeah. I'm feeling the love, Ellie. I'm feeling the love.
I would love to know about your realization story then. Like, was it before that date? Or tell me, how did you sort of find out about, did you know about this asexuality beforehand? Or
I think when I was at uni, I kind of started to explore different sexualities, because I grew up in a very traditional household. My parents were like, we don't care if you're purple and diagonal, so long as you're happy, be whatever you are. But it was very much in their mind, it's you're straight, you're gay, you're bisexual, those are your three options, because that's what they were educated with. So when I went to uni, I purposely started to branch out. I read a lot anyway, I work in publishing, I'm a writer, so I'm always looking at kind of different relationships and such. So I discovered polyamory, and I had friends that were polyamorous, and open relationships were a thing and things like that. So I was learning through osmosis, I was learning through the people I was meeting, I was learning through reading. And then I started dating and I hated it. Like, I started dating when I was 16 and I hated every second of it. Until I fell in love when I was 20, I hated every boyfriend I had. Sorry to all the guys I had as boyfriends from those ages, but it sucked. It was not for me in the slightest. And then, I think most people probably have a similar story, but I read an Alice Oseman book. In my case, Radio Silence, which has a demisexual character. And the way she explained it, because she herself, I believe, is in the asexual spectrum, I'm not entirely sure where, but I know that she's identified as asexual in the past. But the way she explained it wasn't preachy, it was natural, and it was everything I experienced. And it was light bulb moment, click, oh, I'm not wrong. There's nothing wrong with me. Because I got to the point I actually started to think physically there was something wrong with me. Because of the way I felt in my own body, and the way that everyone was saying, well, when I see this guy, this is a feeling I have. Like, am I just not attracted to anybody? Like, what is going on? Yeah. But I still love romance. So I was very confused by that feeling, because I'm not aromantic. I am a romantic person. So, which again confuses the hell out of so many people in my life. They're like, but you just said you're not. It's like, well, I am.
But I love the kisses and the cuddles.
Exactly. I love all the romance of it all. Yeah. I just don't like the sex of it all. And unfortunately, I've yet to find, through apps anyway, the people that are willing to have one but not the other, or willing to work on one until such time as I'm ready for the other, which is actually the main difference for me.
Don't go on any asexual dating forums. That's a really depressing place. You think those normal apps are depressing? I say normal, but you think all those dating apps that everyone goes on,
Oh dear.
Some of those asexual forums are interesting.
Yeah. I always wondered why there wasn't like an asexual dating app, but then I realised you can't really police it. And what are you going to bring? A certificate of asexuality? Like, you can't. So for whatever reason, it will always be infiltrated. And that's by people that are confused, which is fine, but also by people that don't believe it's real. So it's kind of how do you date as an asexual person? It's so complicated, more so than I think people realise. But and frustrating. That was it for me. Really, I read Radio Silence for Alice Oseman. Made me feel seen, triggered a load of thoughts. I read everything that she basically had written at that point, and there's a lot of kind of asexuality. Things like Sex Education, the TV series, really helped as well. Like Gillian Anderson's like therapy genuinely was helpful. So
I'm a bit like, I'm not annoyed because obviously it was amazing it was brought up, but it was so small and it was hardly elaborated on. The first time when I watched it, I wasn't even aware of asexuality. I wasn't aware of my identity or whatever. And so when I watched it, I didn't really clock it. But then obviously when I did realise I sat under the ace spectrum, I got told about sex education. And I was like, but I've seen it. I don't remember that bit. And they were like, watch this scene. And I was like, oh my goodness. Yes. However, it didn't really serve its purpose as such because it didn't trigger anything at the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish that they had gone deeper with that because I think that would have been really helpful to me at the time as well. Yeah. Whereas it was helpful afterwards, after my traumatic experience. But like,
I think because I didn't watch Sex Education until it nearly all came out. So I was watching it behind. So I think that was because if I'm being honest, I mean, I told you this earlier, but I don't mind admitting it. I didn't really have a great sex education. And I was not confused. I just misunderstood a few things until quite late, shall we say. So being a teenager and 16-year-old girl that has no idea the penis goes inside the vagina was quite an eye-opening moment for me. But which is not, you know, it's shade basically on my primary school because I didn't get sex education at secondary school at all. And my primary school, they only ever taught you about periods. There was no sex education at all. And my family are great. Like, my parents talk about anything at the dinner table. We've definitely talked about stuff like this, but it just never went in. I don't think anyone explicitly told. That's a double entendre.
sorry, I was trying not to laugh. I was trying.
Go for it. But it never went in. And I think, to be honest, maybe I'm a visual person. I just didn't. I was lacking the visual, perhaps. I don't know. But so by the time Sex Education, the series came out, and I was self-educating and learning and deep diving into things, and there's so many puns here, but it was innuendos even. But it was quite eye-opening in that sense. I think they could have done more. But it's very, I've yet to see a good program or TV show that really has an asexual character at its heart that really drives the plot in some way. I think they've started to experiment more with Heartstopper with, is it Isaac? The friend that reads books, which is basically the male version of me. So they've started to show a bit more of that, which I think is good. But yeah, I think there's a sense maybe it's a bit boring. Like, you don't do anything. I was like, but you do. You do everything except have sex.
But it's also like I was saying earlier, I think it can be such a funny story. It can be told so well with comedy, which I would love to do one day. But I've just remembered also in Sex Education, actually in the last series, they did have like a full asexual character, didn't they? And they did go into it there. Didn't they?
I think
But the thing is, she was also a bit of a bitch. And I was like, I don't want an asexual character who's a bitch.
Yeah, but I'm a bit of a bitch, so, you know.
Yeah, but it's just going to make people hate us. Mm. We're not all bitches, you know?
No, you're lovely and nice and sunny, and I'm just like sitting here and just like,
meh. I feel like I'm sandwiched in between. I'm a Gemini, I can be both. You know, full on both. But yeah, I genuinely can't remember the last season. I think I watched all the others multiple times. I only watched the last one when it came out and it wasn't that great. So
it wasn't great. But no, there is that one scene. I love Gillian Anderson so much. Mm. Sorry, let's not talk about her the whole podcast.
Yeah, so we'll go that way.
Yeah, exactly. You said that you were an author, right? Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry, I should have started with this. Dear listener, Ellie is an author and she has written this amazing book that I'm yet to read, however I will read, but I have seen what it is about and it sounds incredible. Can you talk to me a little bit about your book and tell us, what is it called, first of all?
Yeah, it's called That's What She Said.
Mm-hmm. Love. Yes. So what is it about?
It's about two friends, one of whom is demisexual, so that's Beth, and then her best friend and housemate is Serena, and she's bisexual. And I think they're basically polar opposites in Friends. So Serena is very sexually confident and a bit closed off emotionally, whereas Beth is very self-realized and self-therapizing and very in touch with her emotions, but is demisexual and has never had sex, never really been interested. And then she's kind of approaching her 30s. She has a bad experience at a hen do, where basically, if my experience of Hindus anyway, have been very sexualized and a lot of strippers and discussing sexual acts, and it's very hard to be involved when you're an asexual person, when you can't say anything, but also you're surrounded by drunk people who are making fun of everybody. So it's quite a vulnerable situation to be in. So it's that kind of is the opening scene. And from that experience and a few other things that happen, Beth, as the character, decides she wants to learn more about her sexuality. Like, she's never been educated about it. She's never really wondered what it will mean for her later in life with regards to relationships and family and dating and the ticking clock and all that. And she ropes in Serena, or rather Serena just hops on in, is like, I'm going to help with this. This sounds great. And gets a bit of a list together to sort of experiment, shall we say, and to learn and have a sexual odyssey. And it starts off as one way, it kind of develops into another, and Serena goes through an emotional odyssey at the same time. So it's the two friends very much creating the jeopardy. It's not a romance with lots of secondary parties. There is romance, though, but it's, these two friends sort of helping and hindering one another as they undergo these sexual and emotional odysseys and come to terms with each other's sexualities.
Oh, so, I can't wait to read this book.
Hopefully it works, but it was inspired by me and my best mate. She won't mind me talking about this because she's in it constantly. But she's not bisexual. She's not like overtly sexually confident and all that stuff. But she and I lived together. I've known her since I was 11. You know, I could give her my soul. I'd know she'd take care of it. That kind of deep friendship. And we were sitting in a pub garden one day and we were both drunk. She was lamenting a breakup or dating experience or something, and she just turned to me, like, completely sincere, completely pissed, and just said, do you know, when I look for a man, I look for you with a penis. And it was the most flattering thing she's ever said to me, and I was like, oh my god, thank you. And it was just, I understood what she meant. It's just that kind of, you do look for your best friend. But in her case, she just wanted me with a penis. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I can't provide that.
I love that.
But it just triggered this idea of, God, what are these two friends like in terms of, you know, there's me, like, completely not interested. And there's her looking for love, looking for all the physical attributes of it anyway. So it sort of triggered it. So, but yeah. Lots of fun things.
I actually can't wait to read it. I read Loveless and I feel like that validated a lot of things for me, and I think your book will probably do the same, and I hope it does the same for other people as well.
I feel like once we've read it, we should do an episode on it.
But I'll come back.
Exactly.
And you talk about it, and then I'll just slip in and say, "Do you like it? Great." And you're just nodding like, "Yes."
From sure. your description, I feel like I'm definitely like, I really already want to read it, and so
always.
I feel like we will give positive reviews.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure it's great, and it's already out, isn't it, for people to purchase?
It is. Yeah, it's out everywhere in America, US. Well, that is the US, Australia, UK even. So it's been out since May. Time has flown.
Where can people purchase it, Ellie? Where can they go to?
It's in paperback, audiobook and ebook. It's actually got a member of the Sex Education cast has narrated it. She plays Beth Robin Holdaway, who I adore. And
very cool.
They play Beth, amazing. So she's a they. Sorry. It's from the grammar point of view. I really struggle with that, but I don't mind self-correcting. But so they play Beth, and then Elle Potter plays Serena, and their voices are just, there's one scene in particular, I think it's chapter 22, that is particularly interesting to hear. My cousin, her husband is currently listening to it in his white van. He's a white van man. And he's currently listening to it. And every time I see him, I'm like, have I traumatized you yet, Rob? He's like, no. So what chapter are you on? He's like, I just got to chapter 10. Okay, call me at chapter 23 and don't be driving. So he has an apprentice in his car. I feel like I'm slightly scarring them for life or educating.
I love this.
No, educating.
There's some moments I do think to myself, I can't believe I wrote that and my family are going to read it. But okay, my mum can't. Like, she tried, and she got about two chapters in, and she was like, Ellie, as soon as you mentioned dilators, I was out. Fair.
I'm so excited. Was it really surreal to, like, hear other people saying the words and, like, almost hearing it come to life?
Mm-hmm. I actually struggle with that in particular. I think it's, this is why I could never write a screenplay or a play, because as a writer, you have to listen to your work back to kind of fix it. But when you're an author, by the time you listen to it, it's already published. So all I hear are the errors in particular, or the things that I would like to fix, or I think of as errors. But it is very surreal, because these are characters that have been in my head for 5 years, and suddenly they've got voices and they're not mine. And it's, yeah, it's very interesting. It helps for my sister will listen to it rather than read it, because as she said, and actually a lot of my family have said, when they read it, all they hear is my voice, which is probably why my mother struggled when she got to the dilator point. Yeah. Whereas if they listen to the audiobook, at least they have the actors, actresses, or they have their voices instead. So that helps a lot, I think, for them. So yeah, I've only listened to half of it, because after that, I just can't. It sounds great. They really did a good job. I just can't get past it.
Oh, how would you feel if they made it into like a film or a series?
Oh, I'd absolutely be like, please put me in this. I don't care. I'll play a doormat. I'll just put me in it. That'd be great. No, I'd love that. That's one of my bucket lists, is to have an adaptation of something one day. So this one I feel like could be.
But... yeah, maybe we can make it happen.
Yeah.
We're big into manifestation on this podcast, so we're speaking it into existence for you, Ellie.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
There's absolutely a room for asexual series or film out there.
We'd be here for it. How long did it take you, like, start to finish to write it?
So actually, not very long, because I came up with the idea in, it was September 2019. And then I put the idea down on paper and properly planned out in February 2020. And if you recognise the timing, COVID. So I ended up staying at my parents. And so from March until August 2020, I had nothing to do at the weekend. So I just wrote the entire novel, which was surreal, because I was in my childhood bedroom and my mum kept popping up to bring me like coffee and biscuits. And every time she did, I was like slamming the laptop down. She must have, at this point, they didn't know I was demisexual either, so they must have thought I was doing something questionable. And I was like, no, I'm just writing a novel about tantra workshops. Go away. just casual thing you do. But so it only took me, 6 months? Give or take, 5-6 months. But cool. Then the editing process, and I overwrote it, and then I had different agents and different... I wrote 3 other novels afterwards, so it was a lot of back and forth and messiness. So yeah, it took a while to edit, so I didn't finish editing it until January 25.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so you could say 5 years, but in the actual... getting the first draft down, 5 months. So,
it's a little baby.
It was a little baby.
Aww. Yeah. Was it weird, like, writing about this sexuality that you hadn't told your family about and writing it like in the same premise as them?
It was very cathartic for me, actually. I learned a lot during the process, because I was doing a lot of research. Mm. And because I think I was using it as a way to kind of figure my sexuality out. So while Beth, the character's experiences are not my own, and while she's not me, there's always an element of autobiography, I think, in every author's probably lying if they say there's not. It sneaks in regardless. So I think it was my way of kind of not coming to terms, because I was comfortable in it. It was just the same way she was going through this like extreme sexual odyssey. I was going through the same in a more, I don't know, meta way. I was learning about it and discovering more and making myself okay with it and just accepting this is completely normal and completely fine. And everything you've been told and trained through non-existent sex education and heteronormative social standards are actually not true, or they don't have to be for you. So that was quite, helpful. Because I never intended it to be published either. I sent it to my agent and I said to her, I've written this thing. It's not really for you, is it? And she came back with, it's fun. It's not really my thing. So we did a bit of work on it, but to be honest, this is why I wrote a load of other novels in between. It was more a project for me. And then I moved agents because my other agent left, and I sent it to an agent who actually rejected me. And I said, actually, I've got this other book. It's this sexual odyssey, asexual story. And in all caps, she replied, send this to me now. And within 2 weeks, I had an offer, and it's been great ever since. So it's just about finding the right people for the right book, because my first agent wasn't her thing. She didn't understand it. Completely fine. But my second agent was like, I'm all over this. I know exactly where to do this. This is great. So,
I love that.
That's very cool. Mm.
That's really, really cool.
My agent is cool.
Yeah, she seems really cool. Yeah, she seems like one of us.
Do you think you would write another Like, is it something that you could do a sequel, or is it like something that you could?
I probably wouldn't
like a
do
different
a
kind of theme, but similar.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't do a sequel. I'm terrible at sequels, mostly because I have a memory that's terrible. So I wrote another novel before this, as I was commissioned to write it. So it was my book. I did write it, but it was someone else's story idea. And I was talking about something, and I was complaining about something, and my best friend just pulled me aside and said, "Ellie, you do realise you wrote an entire book on that subject, right?" It's like, "Oh yeah, I did. Oh, sorry." And I completely forgot. It's just, I'm terrible. So I can't really do sequels because I'd forget which character was which, really, what they did and who they ended up with, and their experiences and family background. It's a lot. I can't do world building, so probably not. But I'm currently, or about to go on submission again, where basically my book goes to my editor and she gets first right of refusal, hopefully acceptance, but we'll never know. But in that one, this was one of the stories I wrote after I wrote That's What She Said, and it was a heterosexual Christmas romance. Again, I was not commissioned to write this time. I was just asked to write something sellable, which is like, okay. And I did enjoy this. I love Christmas, so writing a Christmas romance was quite nice. And then I looked at it again about 7-8 months ago, and I said to my agent, I like the story, but it's not me. And she said, well, make it you then. It's like, okay. So off I went. Into all the LGBT characters came flooding back. The main character is gray sexual. So it's a gray sexual Christmas romance because, yeah, it's a thing. So fingers crossed things go well with that, but we shall see what happens in the future. Manifesting.
Very cool.
So yeah, but I think I don't want to say it's like a trope or a trait of mine now that the main characters are always asexual, but the big thing for me with That's What She Said in particular, as someone that also works in the publishing industry, in marketing, I've marketed so many books in fiction, is the fact that there are no adult asexual stories that aren't fantasy, at least none that I've discovered yet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like YA and coming of age and a lot of fantasy, which is brilliant and we need more. But there's the reason I wrote That's What She Said as a kind of explicit, spicy adult contemporary is because there was no explicit, spicy adult contemporary asexual story that I could find ever. And I've had a few criticisms about it, though. People have said, oh, this is a coming of age story, it feels YA, and I get where they're coming from, but it's a coming of age story about people in their late 20s, early 30s, because you can come of age at other points in your life. I don't understand why we all have to know exactly what our sexuality is and be comfortable with it and be in love by the time we're 21. I just never got
that. I don't even think I knew what my favourite type of cereal was when I was 21. Like,
I didn't know the penis went like, the vagina still, you know?
Yeah.
We're in different stages.
You're like, it doesn't go in the ear? That's so weird.
Oh my God.
What?
I'm so confused.
Yeah, but you know, if you don't explore that, you're a bit like, I'm not putting that in there. Like,
yeah.
I'm not doing that.
No. It feels alien, right?
Well, you spend however long calling them private parts, and then you're expected to go, oh, these are my private parts, but you're allowed to see them. And not only are you allowed to see them, you're allowed to put your private parts inside my private parts. And that's just gross.
I just know. It's the same as, like, don't talk to strangers. Never talk to strangers. Don't do it. And you're 18. Here's a dating app. Go to strangers' houses.
Go and talk to strangers.
I think to me, I'm quite a literal person, so I got those drilled into me. I used to be the stranger danger teacher at my school for like 7 years as well, so I really drilled it into other people. Do not talk to strangers. And then suddenly it was like, okay, so you go off to their house now and stay overnight and you don't need to tell anybody. It's like, what?
This goes so against confusing. every fiber of my being.
Completely
confusing. Did you find that writing the book helped you, because I'm really interested in now how you sort of told your family and told people about it, because you obviously, you seem like you were okay with it almost as soon as you realized about the sexuality, but you didn't tell anyone, or you didn't tell your parents straight away.
No, it never came up. That's what she said. It never came up in conversation. It wasn't, my parents were always very, like I said, accepting of any kind of sexuality. But I think there was also this expectation, because I dated guys, that I was heterosexual and everything else. And I told them I'd stop dating. And I used to get the sympathetic, oh, baby, oh, darling. I'm like, oh, God.
No.
But yeah, I used to drop it into conversation every now and then. And they'd be just like, oh, yeah, but you're heterosexual. I'm like, well, actually, I'm not really. I'm like, okay, moving on. And that was kind of it. But it was, I don't think I ever kind of sat them down and said, mum, dad, I'm demisexual. Because I don't believe in that. I don't believe in coming out. I believe in letting people in, but not coming out. I don't feel if people are gay or transgender or anything like that, I don't need them to sit me down and explain it to me. Yeah. I'm completely fine for anyone to just to be who they are and for me to figure that out later. It will take a while, as we discovered, but it, you know, I have no issue, so I never felt the need to tell people in that regard. And then typically I wrote a book, so like it's like throwing it out of their head. But no, I think to be honest, it wasn't until I got the book deal and I had to explain to them what the book was about, and then they were like, but why are you writing that? And I was like, well, I'm Demi. And I think that was the sort of trigger for them. So that was probably 23 that I started kind of openly talking about it. I never put it on social media. It wasn't, again, it's just something, not to say private parts and stuff, but it just wasn't something that came up naturally in any of the TikTok content I produced or the blogs I was writing at the time. It was just wasn't there. Because it's not in books, which is predominantly what I talk about on all my social media channels, there's nothing to talk about to trigger a conversation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it sort of naturally came out. And now it's my favourite thing to do at when family gatherings and family friend gatherings is to pull out an app with all the flags on and say, do you know what this flag means? They're like, no, it means bisexual. What does that mean? It's the best game ever. And I do it probably at least once a year. It's brilliant. Sapiosexual is my favourite one at the minute because it blows people's mind. They're like, what does sapiosexual mean? It means you're sexually attracted to intellectually intelligent people. And that is it. And I love it.
Oh, you need to come on the episode where we talk about all the labels.
Yeah, because we found one and I can't for the life of me remember what it was, but it's basically where you're only sexually attracted to yourself.
Is that... No, it says mythosexual.
Ego.
Egosexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? You do you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Aegon Targaryen. It's like, yeah, he's sexually attracted to himself. Yeah. That's how to remember it.
That's but I like that one to me seems like a very, like, to me, it seems like you'd have a lot of confidence in yourself, like, to be attracted to yourself. And so I quite like that because I like the idea of people having, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's how people feel, but that's how I kind of see it. And it's quite cool that you've got that much self-confidence that you find yourself attractive, because normally people don't necessarily like look in the mirror and go, yeah, I want a bit of that, but this is what they're doing. I'm like, that's kind of cool. To me, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's quite refreshing, actually. Yeah. It's a case of, again, it's that whole, when would you bring it up? You just wouldn't. It's not something that, again, not because you're ashamed. There's just no natural. So I've never sat, well, okay, actually I have. I have sat down with my friends and said, okay, guys, what sexualities are we today? Like, how's everyone feeling? Tell me everything. But it's not something that you do with family, friends and such. I've never, because it's considered rude, isn't it? It's almost like, I don't know.
But also, like, it's the idea that you're kind of like, I don't know if people would necessarily sit down with their parents or their grandparents and go, right, Nan, guess who I'm shagging or not shagging? Like, it's not necessarily the conversation. Some people might, like, it's, you know, different people's personal relationships with their family, but you wouldn't necessarily do that. And because obviously with the ACE umbrella, it is kind of centered more around sexual attraction and things like that. It's not necessarily something that you would converse about. Yeah. I think I find that it comes up more like if I'm chatting to people and I've gone on dates or they ask about my dating life, then that's when I bring it up and go, oh yeah, no, I've been on a couple of dates. Oh, have you slept with them yet? No, I'm not going to do that. Why not? I don't want to. All right, fair enough. Mm. Like, that's kind of the only time it will come up naturally.
Yeah, I think I've had it coming up more regularly in the last couple of years. One, because of the book, but also because I realised I had a great therapist. There's a bit of a story here. I had a great therapist years ago for something. I had homesickness and whatever. I was just chatting to him. And for whatever reason, we got talking about fantasies, not in any kind of sexual. He was just like, what do you daydream about? Like, what do you daydream about? Your career or your family life or your being married or your wedding day? What's your fantasy? And we were chatting about it. And he always said, okay, what do you see in the future? I was like, oh, I see myself being a mum. He was like, okay, what's your fantasy? I was like, well, I daydream about occasionally having kids, like maybe maximum two, probably. I know a girl, a boy, a girl. I don't care, really. I'm not fussed about gender. He's like, okay, what about your partner? It's like, I don't have one. It's like, in your daydream? It's like, no, I'm either a widow or I'm divorced. Or he's away somewhere and that's fine. And he's just like, you've never daydreamed parenting with other people and married. It's like, no, not really. They're kind of there for the kids and then their purpose is served and they die. It's not, they're just not there. And he kind of, he said to me, do you think you don't want, you want kids, but you don't want the partner? And it was the, again, the whole, you have permission to do it that way if that's what you want to do. And to be honest, I now cannot think of doing or having children in any other way except through solo parenthood, through IVF or IUI, so intrauterine insemination and such, or turkey baster, to debase it. But to be honest, I find it funny. So yeah, it's so, and I'm okay with that. And I've spoken to my parents about that because that's something I should do sooner rather than later because I'm now 30. So from a point of view, from the cost and the NHS and everything, they're like, you need to do it within the next 5 years. So money-wise, that's savings and such. So it's something that's been, I've been discussing a bit more because I'm also a niece. I have a niece now. I'm also an auntie. So the topic of grandkids being the youngest at 30 is very much very prevalent in our family life. So now that that's come up, because I talk about going down the route of solo parenthood, it naturally comes up. They're like, but don't you want to wait? Don't you want to find the right person? I'm like, no, I found the right person. She sat right here.
That's yes.
Right. It's, and there's like, with solo parented, I know it's going to be bloody hard. I know it's going to be horrific and difficult, and I probably will regret it during the process of raising the child, in the sense of the late nights of screaming, the nappies, the not being able to take the bins out unless the baby's on your hip. It's all of that, I'm sure, one that will hit me, and it'll be, I can't believe I did this to myself. But I've always wanted to be a mum, but never wanted to be a wife or a partner. Or,
do you know what? I relate so hard to that. Like, I, before I knew that I was happy to date girls, and people would say to me like, oh, do you want kids, I always used to be like, I don't really know. And everyone would be like, well, how do you not know? Like, people either know that they do or they know that they don't. And then through kind of the journey of like discovering myself, it's like, actually I do want kids, but I don't want to be the one to carry them. Like, I have no personal interest in being pregnant.
Yeah.
And I think until I like started dating girls, where obviously there is an option for either person to be pregnant, I always just thought that I wasn't sure about having kids, because I was a bit like, well, you know, the penis goes in the vagina and I really? Would be pregnant. Yeah. So I found that out today, guys.
Running jokes.
But it was just a bit like, I have no interest in that. And then it used to kind of make me a bit sad, and I was more a bit like focused on like, oh, actually, would I want to adopt? And like, I'd be quite happy adopting and this and that. And it all kind of came to a bit of a head when I was a bit like, oh no, I would like to be a mum, but I have no interest in the kind of making the baby side of it and the carrying of the baby. But actually then when I started dating women and it was a bit more of an option, it like, that's what kind of made me realise that kind of side about me. So it's nice to figure these things out as well. And I think that goes back to being ace and not being interested in sex. It's like, I'm interested in the baby bit, but actually sex doesn't really come into the baby bit if you're dating women.
Yeah. Just not wired that way in the sense of sex and such. And I think people have said to me, oh, would you regret it? I was like, what do you mean? Would I regret not having sex? I think I'd regret it having it. Because actually, it's more a case of, until such time as I, you know, have that emotional connection with someone where it may well happen and such, I feel like if I have sex, I'm having it because I feel like I need to. And that's the worst reason to sleep with anybody. So,
I went through a lot of that, like, growing up, just felt like, do it because that's what the social norms are. Do it because then you've got something to... Like, me and Amy always say, like, you know, do it for the plot. Like, and we have so many jokes and we say it and we're like, oh, let's just do it for the plot. Like, and that's about anything. It's not even just like, but I think for a long time I felt like that's what I had to do to seem like normal and to seem not like different to my friends, and that was the expectation. And
yeah, and also it like, it gave me a story to tell, like going in, I don't know, I remember this one time, I used to dance on a Saturday morning or afternoon or whatever, and a lot of the time, like, we would share like our Friday nights or like the gossip basically, and a lot of the girls would like gossip about the people they're sleeping with or whatever happened or like got with a guy. And I remember being like, I need to bring something to the table here because this is not normal. I'm just sat there not like contributing anything. And then I think I must have I can't remember. Basically, I must have gone out one night and then went back to this guy's house. Nothing actually happened. However, I did go into dancing the next day and was like, guys, I went back to this guy's house. Oh my God, it was crazy, blah, blah, blah. I never even, like, I didn't insinuate that we had slept together. That kind of actually never came up, but I definitely, like, made it seem as if it had happened, but I never said it did, I never said it didn't. But I was definitely, like, excited.
And I think people just jump on that, and because that's how, if they did that and they don't identify as ace, if they did that, that's what would happen. People make that assumption that, well, this is what I would do and she's done something similar, so it must have gone that way.
Yeah.
And then you don't want to put your hand up and go, oh, no, we just had a little spoon and went to sleep.
I actually like passed out in bed.
And I think as well, like, with, like, for me as well, growing up with certain guys, they wanted to have that, like, stud thing. So they wouldn't, if you turn around and if they heard, oh, you've been telling people that we slept together, they're not then going to go, well, I didn't sleep with her. They want that kind of accolade of, I've slept with as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Not all people, like, this is a bit of a generalisation, but I think there's not, like, from my perspective, there's not a lot of guys who would have gone, no, we didn't sleep together, if you kind of insinuated that, because...
Is that kind of point time as well where I wish that I knew about that sexuality, because then I could have just said, like, oh, this is why I'm not bringing the gossip to the table. Or like, oh yeah, I did go back to this guy's house, but because, like, I do identify as asexual, like, obviously nothing happened. Or like, I wouldn't even have to explain that. They would just know. Mm. Whereas, like, I didn't even know that asexuality existed at that point. So I was just like, oh yeah, I kissed this guy. Oh, I went back to this guy's house. Secretly nothing happened. But like... Yeah. And also at the time, I was definitely questioning, like, why didn't anything happen? It could have.
Mm.
But it was on me, like, why did it not? But I didn't search it up, I didn't dig deeper, I just kind of left it at surface level, being like, I didn't want to. It wasn't the right guy, it wasn't the right moment, whatever. But actually, looking back, now that I know what I know, and about myself, like, educated myself, it was definitely because I'm asexual.
Like,
so obvious. Why did no one tell me this?
Yeah, it's just, it wasn't like the language of it. I mean, at university, that's the time, like I said, I was looking for the answer without even realizing I was looking for it, but there wasn't any language for it. And I did have a conversation with one of my friends while I was at university, because she also I think now identifies as asexual, I have to confirm, but in terms of, we were both non-active, and so we kind of found each other. But we'd have our, like, little coffee chats and such, and we'd chat, and she just, like, oh God, isn't it refreshing not to talk about sex? I was like, yeah, because I don't have it. It's so hard to talk about it when you don't have it. It's exhausting. And we'd be talking about other things, from Eurovision to cricket to whatever we wanted to talk about that week. And it was actually, again, it was that strengthening friendship, the platonic love, the kind of, we actually talked about real things as well, emotions and such. Because everybody else I kind of knew at university, is the reason that I don't really speak to anybody else at uni, it's because I never got to know them. Because everyone just wanted to talk about relationships and sex and who was shagging who and who was kissing that person and what the drama was. And I couldn't be involved. So I'd spectate, I'd be there. I got some great quotes out of it, which did end up in the book. So I did tell one of my friends that I didn't have sex, and she's great. You know, we're not friends anymore, but only because we just didn't see each other after uni. But she was the Serena, I'd say, in the story. And I told her, I don't really have sex. But I had this guy, he was a mate, he was coming around my house that evening. And she went, okay, I'm going to tell you what to do. So, okay, I'll take any advice at this point. She went, great, you're going to get naked. So, okay. She said, you're going to cover yourself in lube. I was like, okay. She said, you're going to see what happens. And that was literally the only advice I got. And it was, she was so serious about it. Like, she was texting me throughout, which again, you'll see in the book, and was like, has it happened yet? Are you naked yet? Have you covered yourself in lube yet? I'm like, oh my God, I'm 19 years old. The pressure is intense. But that was, for some people, that was all it took. They had the confidence to kind of, you know, strip off, have a moment, get on with it. And it just wasn't the case. And he and I were fine. We were just mates. But yeah, it was interesting. It was exhausting. It was so, every time I felt like I had to defend myself as well, which wasn't great.
See, that's how I feel now. Like, now a lot of my friends do know, and like, it's nice because I'll go on a date and I'll come back, and instead of them going, did you kiss, did you sleep with them, did you do this, they just go, did you have a nice time? And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go on another date, or no, like, it was nice, but we're not gonna, like, there's no, because they know now and they don't care, in a good way, don't care. it's just, did you have a nice time? Did you have a connection with this person? And I think that it's helped, like you said, get to know people. Like, my friends have got to know me a lot better in terms of, like, me exploring, like, what I want in the future, and I've figured out more what I want in the future, and it's just way more helpful.
Yeah. No, it is nice. It's nice not to have that pressure of, like, trying to come up with some gossip or, like, trying to make what happened seem interesting.
Sorry, my cat's just appearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, who's called Puck, which also feels slightly wrong somehow. Yeah.
Oh. No, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about or ask or
to think, really. Covered quite a lot.
I feel like there is loads more we could talk about. However, we are getting on.
I think we do need a part two. I think when we've read the book,
just to hear your opinions, because I think again, this is before the podcast, not, I think the, along with the criticism about the coming of age element of the story, the other big thing was people said it was too, not on the nose, I think it was more a case of some people felt like it was more of a how to be demisexual or what it is, and kind of really educating people, but the 50% were like, it's too much, and the other 50% were saying, I didn't know this. And the whole point was, I was discovering it. So I was writing it from the perspective of someone that didn't know anything. And I think a lot of people that have picked it up know enough or know quite a lot. But my intention of the book, once I knew it was going to be published, or once it was going to go out into editors and had the potential to be published, was to educate, I think, an element of it, and to help people feel seen. Like, I don't care about the bad reviews or people that give it 3 or 5 stars or the people that say DNF one, you didn't read it. Okay, maybe that one bothers me, but the rest of them is fine, so long as someone in the array of 3 or 4 stars just says, I felt seen, or this helped me, delighted, day made, brilliant, happy. And they could be like, I hated the book but I felt seen, and I'd still be delighted, because I just think that's the purpose of it for me.
Well, I think that that's what we've spoken about, like, just the representation is just, like, so much better, like, it's needed. And I think, like, when I've said that, when I first found Amy's TikToks, it was like, whoa, this is so good. So even the fact that there's a book with something in there that I could possibly, like, identify with, or I could go, yeah, that happened to me, or, oh, actually, like, I know someone else who that's happened to, or, like, and I think regardless of whether or not someone likes it, I do think the fact that you've put it out there is, like, super awesome, because it's just more representation, and that's all that we need. Good representation coming from someone who identifies that way, I'm here for it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the only book that I've read was Loveless, and actually I didn't feel exactly the same as the main character in there. However, there were definitely parts of it that I was like, oh, that's how I felt, oh my goodness. And for someone to have written that down, almost like be inside my head and write it down, was amazing, and it just validated everything. So I imagine lots of people are going to feel validation from this, just for there to be, like, aspects of their thoughts out there. They don't need to, like, relate 100% to this character, just, like, aspects of it is going to be so important. So I'm so excited to read it.
I am.
I'm excited to hear your response now.
And I've got a friend who, funnily enough, is also called Beth, and she loves books. Like, I've never known anyone to read as much as she reads, and she also listens to this podcast. But
hi,
like,
Beth.
from what you, like, your description of it, like, she is going to be all over it, like, all over it. So I already know someone else who I'm gonna
Hi, Puck.
I know that she's going to be all over it as well. Like, even though she doesn't identify as Ace, when I told her about the podcast, she listens to it regularly. Yeah, she loves it. She loves learning new things. But the fact that she loves reading, I feel like she's going to love it as well. So I already know someone who's getting the book after I finished it.
Yay. Me too.
You could be my publicist.
Yeah, we're on it. We're on it.
Thank you.
My friend who listens to this, I'm not going to say her name, but... No, I won't say it. I think she'll like it as well. She'll definitely be one that I will recommend it to.
Nice.
Exciting times. Thank you so much for coming on. And like we say, we're going to get you back for part two, which I'm excited
definitely.
For.
Definitely. 100%.
And also, it's been so nice to have 3 of us on the podcast.
Our gang is growing.
The gang is growing.
The 3 Musketeers.
Right, well, that's what this week's episode is called.
That's 100%. What it's called. Brilliant. Right at the end, needed that. Oh, thank you so much. Remember, guys, this is on YouTube, and Ellie is on YouTube with me, so it's not just my face this week, you lucky, lucky people. But yeah, hope you all have a lovely week, and we'll see you and hear you. Well, we'll be back in your ears next week. Goodbye.